Welcome to SGNP. Sit back for the next few minutes and hear stories heard nowhere else, on radio, in a magazine, or on the internet. We're the audible voice of gospel music. Our sole purpose at SGNP is to inspire, edify, encourage, and entertain. Now, here's our host, Darren Sutherland, and his partner, Southern Gospel Music Association president and lead singer for Dolly Parton's own quartet, The Kingdom Heirs, Arthur Rice. What's wrong with living right anyway?
Hey guys, before we start the show today, this is a first for us. This show was so much fun recording with Randy Perry, Arthur Rice, and Jeff Turner that we recorded over 2.5 hours worth of audio. So we're going to have to break it down into two shows, but don't fear, you can listen. Show one's on today, and then show two will be on next week, wherever you listen to it on the radio. Or you can always go to wherever you download podcasts and hear the shows in their entirety. It's just Google or look up Southern Gospel News Podcast. You can also request us from your Alexa at home. Say, Alexa, play Southern Gospel News Podcast. Or you can always go online and look at our website, SouthernGospelNewsPodcast.com, and pull up any show that we've ever done. Thanks so much for listening, and here's part one of the best of the 80s on SGNP.
Well, old Buddha was a man, and I'm sure that he meant well. But I pray for his disciples, lest they wind up in hell. And I'm sure that old Muhammad thought he knew the way. But it won't be Hare Krishna we stand before on the judgment day. No, it won't be old Buddha that's sitting on. There's only one way, Jesus, if eternal life is your goal. In meditation of the mind, it won't save your soul. No, it won't be old Buddha that's sitting on the throne. And it won't be old Muhammad that's calling us home. Or a Methodist and still die in your sin. You can't even be charismatic, shout and dance and jump a pew. But if you hate your brother, you won't be one of the chosen few. Cause it won't be a Baptist that's sitting on the throne, a Presbyterian or a Methodist that's calling us home. And it won't be a charismatic that plays that trumpet tune. So let's all just live for Jesus, because he's coming back real soon.
And welcome to SGNP. Darren Sutherland here with you once again. And Arthur had us tape delayed today, Jeff. He's not here yet, my man. He's in the studio still, but he's on his way. Jeff Turner, our historian, is with me right now. Jeff, how you doing, buddy?
Great, Darren. How you doing?
Doing good. As you heard when we started the show there, Jeff, the Imperials with O Buddha. You remember that song?
I do.
Who was with Armin and the guys then? Do you recall? I mean, you usually know everything. Do you know enough about the Imperials, or did I catch you with one this week?
No, Jim Murray, longtime tenor, and then Russ Taff and David Will.
You know the distinction about that song, "O Buddha," that'll never be repeated in the history of music, in the history of Christian music. You know anything about that song?
No, you tell me.
It's the only song ever to be the gospel music number one song, the contemporary number one song, and the black gospel number one song all at the same time.
Well, you're throwing some good trivia out of me today, then.
Hey, man, you know, I try to catch on. Joining us, Jeff, is my buddy from up in Dahlonega, Georgia. We were talking before we came on the air. Randy Perry's with me today.
Amen. Oh, boys, I'm glad we can press on in the name of Jesus Christ. We've got the victory through Jesus. Amen. Press it on. Like a wounded soldier from the battle, I'm so weary from the fight. Oh, it's been such a long, hard road. You know, I fought with all of my might. Many times I felt defeated, and I was falling far behind. Oh, but Jesus said, keep coming on, you're fighting on the winning side. I'm a pressing on toward the battle. Won't be defeated, we'll not retreat. We're headed for the finishing line. Oh, Satan, he can't stop us. We come too far to change our mind. We're pressing on toward the battle. Victory is mine.
Randy, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, Darren.
I was wrong. O Buddha wasn't black gospel. It was inspirational southern gospel and contemporary number one song for 12 weeks. And Randy, you know what the funny thing about that song is today? Folks fussed about it back in those times, and you remember that. But if somebody sang it today, it's just as southern gospel as any group that sings progressive southern gospel music. And that was back 48 years ago. Is that right? 38 years ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Jeff, before we get in. Go ahead.
I said, it in today's market, it would definitely be accepted, that's for sure.
No doubt. Randy, tell the folks before we get into the show what Randy Perry's up to today, because you're not, you come to singings every once in a while. I know that. You show up every once in a while. You and I ran into each other at the National Quartet Convention. But tell folks what Randy Perry is up to these days.
Man, listen, I've been preaching for 28 years now in full-time evangelism ever since I left the quartet. And so we spend about 45 weeks out of the year on the road, still singing, still preaching, and had a lot of health issues in the last 15 months when I seen the quartet convention. I was a sick puppy.
Yeah.
But I'm back out on the road. This makes my second week back out. So we're out, and so far so good. Everything with my heart seems to be cooperating right now. So we'll see how it goes. But I'm still in Dahlonega, still up there in the mountains, buddy. It's been cold up there because I'm in Florida this week. Thank goodness.
Well, you know, the thing about it is, Randy, when you and I met, you were in the mountains. Now you're in Metro Atlanta, okay? Dahlonega is now Metro Atlanta. You've got a varsity. No, that's Dawsonville's got the varsity, but you're still close.
That's where we go to eat at. We go to eat in what we call New Dawsonville.
There you go.
And man, that place has exploded. I mean, it's just crazy.
It is. You know,
My dad built that highway, that Georgia 400 that goes up down there at 4-lane highway. He built it from one end of it to the other. And I remember when I was a teenager when they was working on it, I said, Dad, this is crazy. I said, whoever would think about putting a 4-lane highway up through these mountains? And he said, well, the DOT says in 20 years you won't be able to get up it. Buddy, you can't get up and down it now. So, I mean, it's crazy. Everybody want to go to the mountains.
Jeff, we're talking today about the 1980s, and it's probably one of the most transitional times in all of gospel music, because when you look at the groups out there, you think about this. You think about the end of an era with James Blackwood and that set of the Blackwood brothers. Okay, you think about mm-hmm. an end of the era with the Masters Five with Hovey and those guys. Even though the Statesman and J.D. Sumner and the Stamps traveled a little bit longer, that era was kind of ushering out. The Jubilee era from the 70s was moving in, kind of pulling over. You had folks like the Rex Neyland Singers kind of, you know, kind of, how do I say this, melting the 70s and 80s together, the Florida Boys. But you had groups like that were just blowing it up, like the Hensons, the Kingsmen, the Cathedrals were bursting on the scene, and big hair and colored jackets were the craze at that time, okay? I would have hate to have been on a bus without a ventilation system with some of these women putting hairspray on their hair and wearing them Easter egg color jackets all the time. But, Jeff, what was going on at that time? I mean, we played the Imperials to start it off. What was going on at that time in gospel music, in your opinion?
Well, the highlight of the 80s for me was when the Masters Five formed.
I told all my troubles goodbye. Goodbye to this chair and the side. This room where I'm wrong cannot be my home. I'm bound for a land in the sky. I walk and I talk with my Lord. I feast every day on His word. Here it is near and I can't stay here. Goodbye. Well, stay on the ground. Rise with a shout, gonna fly. I'm gonna rise with my Lord to the sky. Heaven is near, and I can't stay here. Goodbye, world, goodbye.
The first concert I ever went to was a concert of theirs in 1981. And it was Rosie Roselle, James Blackwood, Hovey Lister, J.D., and Jake Hess. And here's a fact not many people might have known. Connor Hall, who was the first tenor for the Homeland Harmony Quartet in the 40s and 50s, and also their manager, he was the first choice for first tenor of that group instead of Rosie Roselle. Connor couldn't go on the road because of health issues, so that's when Rosie joined the group. It might be somebody didn't know. Interesting fact.
I didn't know that. Randy, did you know that?
Yeah. I actually did know that. And we went full-time in 82, and we worked with those guys during that period.
You know, you had groups that were legendary, like the Masters Five. You had groups that were at the top of their game, like the Florida Boys, the Rex Neyland Singers, who later became the Neylands, as everybody knows. You had groups like the Kingsmen. I mean, and we'll talk to Arthur in just a second when he comes on with us about the Kingsmen. You had groups like that. Then all of a sudden, in the Cathedrals, you can't take the Cathedrals out. You know, one of the greatest eras of their career was at that point. Then all of a sudden, you had groups like Gold City come on the scene. City yep. started up there, Randy, if I'm not mistaken, in Dahlonega right there with you guys. So you saw those folks come from nothing, so to speak. Would you? Isn't that the truth?
Oh, man, their owner was a man named Floyd Beck, and he started the Gold City Quartet, in which the Gold City Quartet started with Floyd Beck, with my dad, and two other guys as a high school quartet.
Really?
That was back, way back.
Yeah.
And so when they all graduated high school, Floyd and my dad was best friends, and so it sort of just disbanded when they graduated high school. Well, then Floyd, you know, he gets wanting to put a quartet together, and so that's how Gold City got formed. He was flying them. Floyd had been very successful in the trucking business. He was had his own airplane. He was flying these guys in and stuff and putting them up at his house. And they I know we kept their first bus up for them. Floyd made a deal with my dad. My dad was in the trucking business. And so we kept their first bus up for them. And that's how we got to know all those guys and stuff, was through Floyd and then through Jerry Ritchie, which was, the first manager of the Gold City before Tim took it over. I remember Jerry Ritchie bringing a 4104. That was the ugliest bus I had ever seen. And he was trying to pawn it off on my dad. He said, "That'd make the Perry's a good bus." I told my dad. I said, "Dad, I wouldn't be caught dead in that doggone thing." But anyhow, I don't know who you finally got to sell that thing to. But anyway, that was that era. And yep. That's sort of the history of how Gold City was formed. But, buddy, it didn't take them long until they just blowed it up.
You know, when you look at Gold City and the songs that they sang during that era, some of the top songs that have ever been sung. I mean, but you can't discount. Just think about this. Within the span of the 80s, Gold City cuts "When I Get Carried Away." Huge hit for them. Okay, huge hit for them. Then all of a sudden they come back with "Midnight Cry." And
yep.
I believe, if I'm not correct, I may stand corrected, "Midnight Cry" was one of those songs that crossed genres. You would hear it not only on Southern Gospel Radio, but you would hear it on contemporary radio back in the day. And it was such a huge, huge hit and such a great, great song.
Yeah, those guys, listen, those guys we worked with, we were booked with the same booking agency, Century 2, up there with Becky Simmons, and so Kingsmen were too. And so, we as a mixed group, they were two male groups. I don't know how many dates we did with those guys, but, man, every now and then they'd stick. Most of the time we were stuck right in the middle of between those two to sort of break that male quartet, having two male quartets on there. But every now and then they'd stick us last. We'd have to follow that doggone Ivan Parker. But "Midnight Cry." And if it wasn't that, we was having to follow our Hamels. He'd sing that doggone "Stand Up If You Love Jesus." So everybody in heaven stood up and said, "Okay, that's enough." Either that or you have Arthur standing out there on the end of the stage holding his breath until he's about to pass out.
Jeff, what's your recollection of Gold City?
Well, you mentioned the two songs you mentioned. Even before that, I think I'll Read It Again in 84 and John Saw in 85 were two big hits for him, too. And then, you talk about albums, that live album they recorded on Heartwarming in 82, that was probably, that was one of their better albums they ever recorded, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Those guys were... They was on the cutting edge. Of course, back in that era, everybody had bands.
Yeah.
And so you had your own live music. And you took the Kingsmen's band, you took Gold City's band, you took the Henson's band.
Which became the Perry's band for a while, didn't it, Randy?
Yeah, it did. We kept when the Henson's disbanded, we hired Kelly Back and Rodney Lashum, piano player, and And we kept those guys about 3 years. And, man, you talk about tearing it up. Now, those jokers could flat tear it up. Us in trouble some places we went.
Y'all didn't sing with the Chuck Wagon Gang too much then, I guess, with that kind of band.
No.
Randy, I saw you guys in 1989 here in St. Louis at the St. Louis House, and it was you guys and the Magruders, and you talking about a rip-roaring night with those two bands.
Gold City was there, too.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, mate, I remember that. You know what I remember most about that? There was an old, right across the street, there was an old hotel, that they was fixing to tear down. And we got there, we thought that place would have showers, and we didn't have showers on the bus. And so they didn't have it. So me and Tracy walked across the street over there and found out there was still power in that crazy building. And we went up about seven stories high and took showers. And, I mean, the outside wall was knocked out. I thought myself, they'd put you in jail if they caught you doing that today.
No doubt. Hey, guys, let's take a quick break, pay some bills here, and we'll be right back on SGMP.
Toccoa Falls College in Toccoa Falls, Georgia. Since 1907, TFC, glorifying God through seeking and developing leaders who will impact the world for Jesus Christ. More information on TFC, call 706-886-7299 or visit them online at tfc.edu. That's tfc.edu.
Once again, I want to stop for just a moment and thank my friend Mike Lindell and the fine folks over at MyPillow and MyPillow.com. You know, when we started this show last April, MyPillow was one of the first sponsors to jump on board. And since, I guess, May, I've been sleeping on a MyPillow. And tell you the truth, I sleep rather well. My wife looks at me sometimes, and she tries to steal my pillow from MyPillow. And I try to steal her pillow from MyPillow, and we just make a mess of things. I'm sure that happens in your house, too. Well, whether you're married, you're single, you're going to love MyPillow no matter where you sleep or who you sleep with. You're just going to love MyPillow. So right now, they got a four-pack special that they're offering with free shipping and a money-back guarantee through March of 2019. That's right, a money-back guarantee through March of 2019. Give them a call today, 1-800-544-8939, 1-800-544-8939. How much is your sleep at night worth to you? They'll advise you on what kind to buy based on what your weight, your bed size, do you use a feather pillow, whatever kind of pillow you use, their sleep experts can help you. 1-800-544-8939. They know how to make it work and make it work well. And always when you call, use that special offer code SGNP. Make sure you use that offer code so we can get credit for it, and they'll know where you came from. You know, recently I started working out a lot, and I went to a specialty running store to help me find some good shoes because the shoes I had were hurting my feet. Quite frankly, folks, if you're having trouble sleeping, MyPillow is the folks you need to call. Once again, 1-800-544-8939. Free shipping and a money-back guarantee through March of 2019. Always use the code SGMP or go online to MyPillow.com. MyPillow.com, but just use that code SGMP. And hey, thanks for being a part of SGNP, MyPillow.
Hi, I'm Karen Peck Gooch with Karen Peckany River, and you're listening to the best in gospel music right here on SGNP.
And welcome back to SGNP, Darren Sutherland. Jeff Turner, our historian up in St. Louis, Missouri, and our special guest this week, special guest co-host Randy Perry, because Arthur's still in the studio and supposed to be with us, Randy. So I'm just making you the co-host today and putting Arthur on the road. How about that?
Hey, that sounds good to me. That's the first time that's happened with me and Arthur. So I'm always having to look up to him, you know.
Yeah, Randy, you were talking about St. Louis and being with the Magruders and Gold City that night. Is gospel music crowds during that period? Is it that folks have just aged, or what was the difference between then and now? What was the big difference?
Oh man, when we came on the scene in the 80s, everybody was saying, you know, gospel music was dying because, you know, all through the 60s and 70s, they had those tremendous crowds. I mean, I remember seeing pictures, and then when we was working with all these, some of the older groups and stuff, which we, you know, looked at as legends, that, you know, they would talk about going to Bonifay, Florida and singing to 10,000 people, you know, and that's, and so when we come on the scene, there was, I don't know, you know, the crowds had dropped off. A lot of your promoters were, a lot of the big name promoters was out. I mean, I remember, I think we worked 2 years for WB Nolan. He was all out through Texas. Well, see, he retired. He was an older gentleman. I think he was in his 90s. And so, and then you had people like J.G. Whitfield, you know, which was known as the old gospel man. Well, J.G. was getting on up in age, too, and his promoting days sort of, you know, was stepping down. And really, it was a struggle to see a new promoter come on and sort of pick up where all these guys left off at. Frank Arnold did for a while. Paul Belcher up in Tennessee, you know, they did for a while, but they didn't stay in.
Right.
And so, you know, when we came through the 80s, man, it wasn't just the concert era that the professional groups, the full-time groups out there was relying on. They was relying on good church dates in order to keep them alive and keep, you know, surviving. And so as the 80s began to wind down, we seen a period of time right there to where the crowd started coming back.
Yeah.
And of course then you have a new promoter, you know, Bill Bailey. He showed up on the scene, and then he started promoting other places in Florida.
Right.
And so, and started building, a lot of these promoters got wise and started building mailing lists and stuff like that. And then when the internet come along, see, that give another avenue to where that you could advertise where you were going to be and people come out. Now, you remember MySpace pages?
Yep.
I mean, I know that's later in the 80s, but still, those were avenues that the gospel groups, you know, latched onto and used to promote. And I, you know, that helps. I mean, there was a time during the 80s when gospel radio, a lot of them was being bought out by either talk radio,
yep,
or the black market, you know, was, mm-hmm, buying them out.
Yep.
And so, I mean, boy, all through that 80s was a tough time. I mean, it's we had some huge concerts, but they were put on by people that were getting older. And then you had a fan base. It's just like I've been gone from the Perrys. I left in 94 and started preaching. And I've been gone long enough to what the new fans of the Perrys out there, that they don't even know Libby's got a brother. I don't know if that speaks bad of Libby not telling them, or, you know, there's really a new fan showed up. And I mean, they just, it's like I worked a concert here a while back with the Taylors,
mm-hmm,
and there was two of those kids come out to me and they said, now you're short, and we know this group called the Perrys, and we've worked with them, and are you any relation? And I said, that's my sister. Oh, we didn't know. And here they are, they're taking pictures with me, and I'm thinking, I can't believe this.
You didn't tell them you was the original God's little people, did you, Randy?
You know what? I just let all that stuff ride. You can tell them, and they still won't remember.
That's funny. Hey, guys, think about songs in the 80s, okay? I'm going to ask you this. Jeff, you may know it. Randy, you may know it. I know Arthur would probably know it. And if I tell you too much more about Arthur, you'll figure it out. It was Song of the Year in 1981, but it was never the number one song on the charts. But it is a standard today in every church, no matter what denomination, no matter what format, be it contemporary, inspirational, Southern gospel, whatever, it's a standard. Either one of you know the song I'm talking about?
Sweet Beulah Land, baby.
I'm kind of homesick for a country of which I've never
Never the number one song, but yet was song of the year. What about that?
That's something wrong with that.
1981. Let me throw these others out to you that were song of the year. And y'all give me your comments. Jeff Gibson and Heaven's Bound. Heaven Bound. Canaan Land is Just in Sight.
Was voted the number one song in 1982 by the subscribers to the Singing News. Canaan Land is Just in Sight.
First about that song, Randy.
I remember Jeff Gibson when they would sing that thing, beating that crazy bass guitar and going, "Hallelujah, hallelujah." Yep.
Here's what. Go ahead.
And then old Ken over there playing that crazy piano, he had a big old hand, and he'd flap that thing up on that high side up there, and it'd ding, 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 ding. Man, for a trio,
yeah,
I'm telling you, those guys could bring the house down.
No doubt.
That was a hot group back then.
Yeah, they had Lawrence there, they had Jeff Gibson, Alan Hamm, whenever we come on the scene, was still singing tenor for them, and of course, mm-hmm. they changed a couple times after that, but Alan was the original mm-hmm. that started with them. Those guys could flat burn it up. Of course, Jeff's songwriting ability, and then he had that Pentecostal background, and there wasn't any place he went to where he that song, and then he'd do that doggone recitation about them crazy Pepsi bottles, picking up Pepsi bottles. Oh, he'd have people crying, about to just fall out the aisles, boo-hoo, and all that. And then the next thing, he'd break loose on that Canaan Land song, and they'd be pitching babies from the balcony. So,
one of my favorite songs, and it's become their signature song still to this day, but the signature person in the group, Ed O'Neill, doesn't sing it. 1982, Antioch Church Choir.
Let me sing in the choir, in the choir. Please let me sing in the choir.
One old man can't be all that bad, won't you?
Please let me sing in the choir.
I guess you'd say he's a fixture. Round town they all knew his name. And every time the church bells rang, Uncle Jesse, he up and came. He always sat in the very same pew, humming in a voice loud and rough. But when it came to the Antioch Church House Choir, Uncle Jesse never heard enough. He always wanted to sing in the choir, but he couldn't sing a lick, don't you know? Why he tried out for the Antioch Choir
34 years in a row.
He'd always get to the tryouts early. He wanted to try out first, but instead of the singing getting any better every year,
it just got a little worse.
say.
Please let me sing in the choir, in the choir. Please let me sing in the choir.
What old man can't be all that bad? Won't you
please let me sing in the choir?
One cloudy Sunday morning, I remember it was raining some. Church bells rang and everybody came except Jesse. He didn't come. Everybody started getting worried, but they figured they'd start anyhow. Just as they did, Jesse's voice came booming down from heaven, and I don't know. I can lift my voice just as high as yours,
maybe just a little higher. Now I found me a choir that'll let me sing. Now I'm singing in the choir.
You folks down there, you can hold me light, 'cause I'm singing
in the heavenly choir.
Well,
I found me a choir.
Down there, you can't hold me light, 'cause I'm singing
in the heavenly choir. Please let me sing in the choir, in the choir. Please let me sing in the choir. One old man can't be all that bad.
Won't you
please let me sing in the choir?
Jeff, what do you remember about that song?
Yeah, that was another hot song back then. I had that one written down on my list here, too, just in case you asked me about it. I always liked to hear McCrae Dove sing it later on, you know.
Yeah.
He always did a great job on that song. Not that the original group didn't do a great job on it, but I just like to hear McCrae sing that song.
You know, Randy.
They still sing it, I think.
Yeah. Randy, you know, you were talking about the Pentecostal groups and their impact. Their impact in the 80s was pretty strong between the Independent Baptist and the Pentecostal and the Church of God crowd. It got pretty popular, and I would say we can thank Eddie Crook for that, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, Eddie had a lot to do with that, but I'm going to tell you now, you look back there and you look at the Hensons.
Yeah.
When they come on the scene, you know, who they were, Jeff? Was it Canaan?
Yep.
That had them?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, there was Calvary Records, too.
Calvary Records, yeah, that's it.
Yep.
And, but, see, those guys ushered, and then you get the Happy Goodmans.
Yep.
See, the Happy Goodmans were still singing when we come on the scene.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, those guys had... You know, you had the Inspiration Quartet from Bryson City up there. They sort of catered to the Independent Baptist and the Southern Baptist somewhat. Then you had the Happy Goodman family that come on, and they just crossed all barriers of denominations.
Right.
I mean, that. And then the Hensons coming on the coattail of them, and, I mean, he just had, I mean, it. And then Eddie did bring... You know, Eddie brought the McCamey's on. He brought us on. He brought the Spencer's on. He brought the Bishop's on.
Randy, you know, speaking of the McCamey's, this is their last year. Where were you the first time you ever saw the McCamey's?
The first time I ever seen them, I was in a little place called, I was in West Virginia. I was trying to, it's not Raynell, it was... we was booked to do a Sunday afternoon homecoming. I never heard tell of nobody about the McCamey's. And so that's right when they first come out with Who Put the Tears in the Eyes of the Lamb.
Yeah, their first number one song. September 1984.
Well, yeah, I actually think that we sung with them like in 82, 83.
Yeah.
That song had been out a while before they even released it as a single, but they had come on the scene. We sung with them up there, and that pig, she wound that arm up and throwed them shoes off. And I was sitting there, and I thought, are you kidding me? Hey, man, listen. I thought that church, and man, there's probably 600 people there.
Yeah.
And that's the first time I ever seen them, and then we booked them. We were having a homecoming sing at our church. That's where we first had it. So we booked them and brought them in.
For the God on the
I never will forget my grandpa on my daddy's side. He didn't go to church. And so I kept begging him to go. I said, Grandpa, there's this old woman. You got to see her. So I took him up there, and he was about 82 years old. And he had to sit right where, I mean, she was at. She spit all over him that day. When I took him home, he told me, he said, now I want to tell you something. He said, if that old woman ever comes back, you be sure to let me know. He said, I ain't sure all of that's God. He said, because I ain't a pretty one to be talking about what is and what ain't. He said, but I'm telling you right now, she can keep your attention. And she made an impact on his life, and there wasn't many people that touched my grandpa. I mean, he was hardcore, died lost, but which was sad. But Buddy Old Peg, she jarred him up. We always made fun of him, told him, said, yeah, said, if Old Peg wasn't married, you'd be after her. might not want to put that on air.
There, think about this right here, guys. 1985. The Singing Americans introduced a song that is a standard today in the gospel music world. I bowed on my knees and cried holy. Jeff, what do you know about that?
Well, that song was written, I believe, back in maybe the 40s even. And the Statesman actually recorded it in the late 50s. And back then, it was, they sung the song faster. You know, when the Singing Americans did it with Mike English, they slowed it way down. But if you listen to that record, you'll hear the song actually done faster.
I dreamed of that city called glory, so bright and so fair. When I entered the gate, I cried holy. The angels all met me there.
Oh,
Randy, think about this right here. The Cathedrals started making it. Listen to these songs right here, the Cathedrals. These are some of their number one songs back in the day. Step Into the Water. Kirk Talley wrote that song. Great song. Can he, could he, would he? If he could, he could, he would, he could. I could, he would, he did. Okay. Boundless Love, which every choir in America has sang. Okay. Think about that. Another great Cathedral song of the 80s, I Can See the Hand. Mm-hmm. You know, people talk about the greatest group of the Cathedrals. My personal favorite group of the Cathedrals was in the 80s when it was George and Glenn and Danny Funderburk and Mark Trammell. I think that was the greatest group of the Cathedrals that they were. May not have been the most polished group of the Cathedrals, but I think singing-wise, the best blend and the best ability. And what you guys thought on that?
That's my second favorite version. I think that's probably the most popular version of all time. If you would take a poll, most likely that'd be the most popular version of all time. I prefer the original group with Coker and Bobby Clark, but that's just me.
Well, you like everything old, Jeff.
Yeah.
Hey, Jeff, where did George Amon Webster come in there?
Late 60s, he replaced Danny Coker.
Okay, all right.
And he played the piano and sung baritone.
So I liked him during that time frame, too.
Think about it. Go ahead.
You want to hear something?
Go ahead.
I remember my family. My daddy would take us to the Singing in the Smokies up there, you know, on the mountain.
Right.
And the Inspirations would have George and Glenn. I mean, they was Cathedrals back then. But I would stand there as a young kid, and when they would come on stage, it was like you had dismissed for a concession meet or something. Other, you know, that's the... And people would just walk out from underneath that, or walk off from that field and everything, go out there and all around the records, and nobody wanted to stay and listen to them.
Strawberry Shortcake time, Randy. Strawberry Shortcake time.
Oh, well, they didn't have Strawberry Shortcake back then. That was later. But
that was later, okay.
I remember running to my daddy. I would stand there and listen to George Yount sing. And I mean, you know, Listen, I'm a lead singer. I didn't care that much about them bass singers.
Yeah.
So, but I'd run to my daddy and I'd sit, and daddy'd be in the out and underneath the, over there around the concessions. I'd say, Daddy, you got to come. You got to hear this old man sing. And my dad would walk over with me, and he would stand there and he'd listen to two or three songs. And he said, that old boy can sing low, can't he, son? And I said, Daddy, he's one of the best. I mean, I had to be around 10, maybe 11 years old. And then the next time that I seen that I remembered Cathedrals, I was in my teens, and I went to the Georgia Mountain Center, and they had them over there. And, man, when they come out on stage, they had Kirk Talley singing tenor, you know, and Glenn Payne, George. I don't remember who sung baritone back then. Roger was playing the piano.
Probably Steve Lee.
You know what? I think you're exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
They blistered that place.
Yep.
And my daddy, I told my daddy the Hensons were there that night, and I said, I want to go to the Henson table. He said, I'm going to that cathedral. I want to meet them boys. And I said, I tried to get you to listen to them when I was about 10 years old. You didn't want to listen to them. He said, I don't know what happened to me. But they flat, when they hired old Kurt, you know, and of course, every group, I think, has a peak time. You know, they come up and they peak, and hopefully they can maintain what they got. But, man, listen, when they got on that recognition, that level to where they become a household name, good gracious alive.
It was like rock stars.
I sure hated following them, I can tell you that.
No doubt. Let's take a break. We're going to come right back. Arthur Rice is going to join us, tell us about his days with the Kingsmen, and we're going to give him a hard time for being in the studio. And You're listening to SGNP.
I remember the day when the Lord saved me. Listen to the words. We hope it blesses you tonight.
SGNP listeners, thanks for tuning in. If you're listening on radio, remember you can always hear the full show on our podcast, Southern Gospel News Podcast, wherever you download your podcast. This show was so much fun recording with Randy Perry, Arthur Rice, and Jeff Turner. that we recorded over 2.5 hours worth of audio. So we're going to have to break it down into two shows. But don't fear, you can listen. Show one's on today, and then show two will be on next week, wherever you listen to it on the radio. Or you can always go to wherever you download podcasts and hear the shows in their entirety. It's just Google or look up Southern Gospel News Podcast. You can also request us from your Alexa at home. Say, Alexa, play Southern Gospel News Podcast. Or you can always go online and look at our website, SouthernGospelNewsPodcast.com, and pull up any show that we've ever done.
Thank you for listening to SGNP. If you're listening on radio, please note you can listen to our podcast 24/7 on your own schedule. Just download wherever you get your podcast from, or visit us online at SouthernGospelNewsPodcast.com. To hear it on your smart speaker, just ask Alexa or Google to play Southern Gospel News Podcast. And after listening, please leave a remark in the remarks section and subscribe, and you'll receive our program free every Friday. And remember to check out Southern Gospel News Podcast social media for daily fun and giveaways. We're the audible voice of gospel music. We look to uplift you every week. SGNP, where it's all about the gospel.